Hey everybody, somebody, welcome.
I'm so sorry. I thought that was my part.
It's all right. I'm gonna try this again.
Okay.
Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very, very excited for this week's show. Happy Mission Impossible Week. Happy Doug Week.
Oh,
here,
thank you.
Back in the F This Movie studio for the first time since what? Our Dude, Where's My Car commentary?
I think it was Avatar.
Was it Avatar?
It was Avatar.
It was a different house and everything.
Everything.
Please welcome Doug back to the show. Hi, Doug.
How you doing, man?
I'm happy to have you in Chicago.
I'm happy to be in Chicago.
In my house and in my heart.
In your heart, too?
That's where you
There's
stay.
There's hardly any room for me in this dark, cavernous cell. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me in your house, in your heart, in your home, and your dungeon basement recording this podcast.
It's very cold.
I'm here.
Sorry that it's cold.
In Chicago, in this cold basement, when it's like 100 degrees outside.
Yeah.
With a dew point of...
Boo-boo.
That's correct. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
This is the week of Mission Impossible Fallout, the sixth movie in the Mission Impossible franchise. Mm. So we thought it would be fun to revisit an older Mission Impossible movie. I had mentioned on a show recently that I was rewatching some of the movies. So we decided to go with Ghost Protes.
Yes.
Not only Doug's favorite movie in the Mission Impossible franchise, but also Doug's favorite movie of 2011.
That's correct. I remember nothing about my list from 2011, none of the other contenders.
It was
The Fighter.
Maybe Iron Man 2.
Iron
and
Man 2.
And then a lot of Ghost Protocol.
A lot of Ghost Protocol.
Yeah. Your list was almost totes Ghost Protes.
Toasts. Toast? Did you say toast?
I thought I said totes, but I might have said toast.
Toast Protes.
Toast Protes.
I'm a millennial. It was definitely my favorite movie of 2011, and I remember watching. That's the year.
Is it also your favorite movie of 2018?
It might be. Yeah. In as much as I've not really seen a lot of movies of 2018, but I remember watching The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo came out the same year, I believe, as Ghost Protes.
It's entirely possible.
And I remember going to see that movie with my wife.
Yes.
And returning from that movie and people asking me, how was The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Yeah.
And all I could do was talk about Ghost Protes.
Well, that's...
Because I was like... And that was like a week had passed.
Well, the villain in Ghost Protes is the main character in the original Danish Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
That's correct.
Not Daniel Craig. And now there's a new girl with
Simon
a blah, blah, blah.
Pegg, I believe is his name.
The girl... In the spider's web? The girl. Do you know what I'm talking about? There's a new one, for real.
No, I don't.
It's not David Fincher. It's not Rooney Mara.
Ooh. Then sign me up for one Fandango.
It's Fede Alvarez, who I like a lot.
Ooh, Fede.
Don't breathe.
Mm. I used to be pro-Fede.
Yeah.
I'm con-Fede. Dumbest joke. This is why you invite me to your cold
Claire
dungeon.
Foy, I think, is playing
Foy
the
Lani.
Girl
Claire
with the
Foy
Claire Foy-Lani. Claire Foy about to come up in a few minutes.
Okay. Because she's making less money than she as the queen. Did you hear that story?
No.
She's the queen, Claire Foy.
Okay.
Not the queen. I'm sorry. Well, no, what's the show?
The
Netflix. The Netflix show.
Crown?
The Crown. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Watch The Crown.
She was Queen Elizabeth in The Crown, and she made less money than not Eddie Redmayne. What's the guy's name? The doctor from Doctor Who. What's his name?
David Tennant?
No.
Matt Smith.
Matt Smith. That Matt Smith is her husband.
Got it.
She is the freaking queen
right.
in The Crown.
She's the crown. The
she
crown
is like in
to.
Every scene of The Crown.
Got it.
And that her husband, who's played by Matt Smith, who is Prince, I don't even know the royal family. But like
Prince Barney.
Prince Kevin. He made more money than she did.
Well, that makes sense.
Yes.
Is she now making the same?
I think she's done, honestly.
Oh.
They did two seasons of The Crown of her version of it, and now they're going to keep making more seasons, but it's going to be new actors and actresses because it's later. This is Crowncast 2018.
Everything you've said has me... Here's my guarantee, everyone. Mm. I will not watch that show.
It's not bad.
That's what I hear.
Because Claire Foy is actually really, really great.
She's talented, and I believe she plays the girl who kicked the spider's web.
She kicked the hornet's nest.
What's the girl...
Kicked the can... Down the dragon.
Something about
throat.
A spider's web. I think it's just Spider-Man.
She kissed the girls.
Spider-Man.
Kiss the girls.
Oh,
James L.
Yes.
Patterson.
Kiss the girls.
Kiss the girls.
You're looking it up right now.
Here's a commercial for a book. Kiss the girls.
From 2005.
No, like 90-something.
From
right?
94.
We saw it enough times that it became a joke between us to the point that Doug bought me that book for like,
the joke
Christmas
wasn't over
there.
You read the book.
That was the ultimate joke was I read the book.
And then I think my mom saw it once and she's like, I like that book. And I'm like, anyone want to switch tables? Anyone want to switch families?
So we're going to talk about Ghost Protes. But first, Douglas.
Oh, Shoot.
From your castle in California.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen The Moat. I've seen The Plebeians. Yeah. I've seen The Chattel. Yeah. All from my castle in California.
Yeah.
I've seen a bunch of stuff because I haven't been on the show in...
Oh my God, it's been a long time.
No, it was right before...
It's been a long time.
It was right before the thing that with the some event. It was right before
Claire Foy not in The Girl Who Did the Thing with the Thing.
Come on,
I'm telling you.
He's looking this up right now. His thumbs are furiously tapping.
I'm going to find
Black
it.
Mirror, a screen.
I'm going to find.
Listen, I saw Dunkirk.
Title. Ooh.
I liked it. I saw Happy Gilmore again. These are things I watch because I'm
me about them.
Half asleep. I saw.
Is IMDb just not updated? Like they don't even have it listed for Fetty Alvarez.
I think you're making
the girl in the spider's web. You're making Claire Foy. Okay, listen, I was right. IMDb just not updated.
You're making stuff up.
Claire Foy, girl in the spider's web.
Don't listen to him, everyone.
I was like 90% correct on a lot of this.
What you're basically revealing right now.
Yeah.
8-year lie.
Oh yeah.
8-year.
Tell me about.
This is quite a confidence scheme. All to get sweet, sweet coin.
So, what do you think of Dunkirk?
Sweet, sweet can. I like Dunkirk a lot. I love war movies.
Mm.
I thought it did a lot of things I hadn't seen before.
Here it goes, everyone. Another Nolan fanboy.
Listen.
Another Chris Nolan fanboy. By the
love
way.
Love tied everyone together.
If you write
in the evacuation
about, if you write
Dunkirk.
About movies or you talk about movies, that doesn't give you license to be on like a first name basis with people or to shorten names. Like, don't start calling him Chris Nolan because you don't know him.
No.
He's billed everywhere as Christopher Nolan. Please call him thus.
He's Lee. Bill Everywhere as Chris Nolan.
Bill Everywhere is his director name.
I'm Bill Everywhere. I thought Dunkirk...
It's The Dark Knight Rises, directed by Bill Everywhere.
Love ties everything together. I actually kind of like that theme. I know that's like
sure,
super
yeah,
cheesy
yeah.
and cliche and
yeah,
dumb,
yeah.
but I really like the idea. Now, granted,
it's
I think
like, all right.
Anne
it's
Hathaway's
love.
Presentation or performance of it is a little saccharine and over the top, but I feel
she's
like, again...
not the problem.
No, but I like that movie. I like... What are we talking about? Star Trek Insurrection. what are we talking about? Interstellar. Interstellar. It's
starring
a good movie.
F. Murray.
Everyone on the site hated it except me. I liked it. It was like my number
accurate,
two movie
okay.
of that year, I
yes,
believe.
Yes, I remember. What was your one?
Ghost Protes. Listen, I am a simple man. I like simple things. I thought Dunkirk was really good. I like war movies, and I think that when you look back at like Saving Private Ryan, how it's the jittery camera work, which makes sense because of the 8 or 16 millimeter film stock that the archivist documentarians used in the landing of D-Day, the beaches in June 6, 1944. Shall I go on?
A day that will live in infamy.
It is. That's December 7th.
I know. Please. So, I'm quoting John Voight. Stands Please. Up out of his wheelchair.
No. He's like
to say we have awoken a sleeping giant. I might be remembering things wrong.
You better go in there, Moxon. That's what John Voight said. Pump then, him up with drugs in
and
the
then
knee.
Josh Hartnett is like, you're cute, but you know you are.
Josh
FDR.
I'm gonna smear some Vaseline on your face. Listen, Saving Private Ryan set the tone for 20 years ago it came out of jittery film stock and an aesthetic in every war movie, whether or not it applied
or
to the aesthetic
like
of that particular
Gladiator.
Conflict. Right. Gladiator came out in, what, 99 or 2000?
2000. But 2000. Okay, to be fair, they were shooting those fights in 16 millimeter back
because that's
in,
how,
in ancient Roman times.
In ancient Roman times. But I really loved, specifically, I won't talk about Dunkirk. I'm sure you've talked about it a lot on the show, and people
Not
are sick
much.
Of it because it's a movie that's a year old. That I really liked the airplane flying sequences in as much as there was zero soundtrack and it was just the breathing of Bane. Not Bane, but the breathing of the actor who plays Bane. What's his name?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy. And him
Time
shooting
for
at...
Time to drop the bomb.
So it was unique and different, and I liked it. I liked the way it it just presented a historical
and historical
moment in history. Can there be a historical moment of history?
There are
historical
also
moments of history.
There are also non-historical moments in history, like this podcast.
This will go down as one of the worst, probably. So it might infamy. I believe that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, December 7th, 1941. Okay, John Voight. I remember. I got it.
It was just something I hadn't seen before. I liked it. It was a quiet movie in the realm of Chris Nolan's body of work.
Oh, Chris Nolan.
It seemed
his name? Something
like
everywhere. I already forgot.
Bill Everywhere. It seemed like a smaller...
Do you want another take, Bill?
Please,
Mike Bain is turning into an old-time radio announcer.
Call me William.
I am the architect of your pain, Batman!
This is Laughcast 2018.
And look who stepped out with Errol Flynn!
It's Mickey Mantle! Dunkirk's good. Hot take. 2018.
Scorching hot take.
Watched Happy Gilmore last night because I got home late and I wanted to put something
on. The spiritual prequel to Dunkirk.
And Happy Gilmore is a freaking funny movie. It is a movie that I remember watching after Billy Madison and thinking to myself, this ain't no Billy Madison. It's funny, kind of, but Billy Madison is super funny. Now, Billy Madison remains super funny.
Yes.
But Happy Gilmore is so funny. It's a movie that is so dumb and they're not even trying to be as funny as they're being, but it's right. Really, really great and funny.
I remember seeing Happy Gilmore and being like, oh, it's less demented than Billy Madison because like there was only the one joke at the end with Abraham Lincoln and stuff. But the jokes are still really funny.
Ghost Protocol's your favorite.
Not yet. No. Oh, okay. So do you like Ghost Protocol?
Happy Gilmore, though. You like Happy Gilmore.
Can I just trust that? Because I have to leave right now and take the kids somewhere.
Thing. We're going to mostly criticize.
How long are you going to be gone for?
I'm going to shut this down and the electricity is going
How long are you going to be gone for?
Probably this whole podcast. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. Yes, you do. And it's all good.
We're going to rank the running scenes. It's
going to
take us a while.
Oh, my God. I love the Tom Cruise run. It's like a thing.
More fan!
More fan! I came down here while they were watching it and I just delivered some of my favorite lines. Promise me you're going to say that it is currently the strongest, best action movie
franchise.
Patrick cannot make that promise. Franchise. I'm sorry.
Current action movie.
I'm going to say it's the best Mission Impossible movie. But I can say that it is the best action franchise.
Patrick loves, just a spoiler, he loves Mission Impossible 2. He thinks it's a perfect movie. He loves John Woo.
Oh my gosh.
He loves Broken Arrow.
We just watched that and it was.
And the leather jackets.
Oh my gosh. Unwatchable. It was.
No, no. That's not what he says at all. That's it. Don't listen to Erica. Patrick did not say that at all. He loves it. Patrick has the worst taste in movies.
Welcome Save it for the Dunkcast. Podcast, Doug. Oh, wait. This is the podcast.
Save it.
So you're going to say good things?
Yes.
Will you tell some stories about like when we saw it in the theater and.
Yeah.
Okay, and like love and schmoopiness too. Is this a schmoopiness?
Yeah.
No. It's you and Doug, right?
Not on Dougcast.
Okay.
Not on my Doug watch.
Okay, so I can just trust that you
like,
can handle this.
InfoWars.
Oh my god.
The lizard people. wasn't a joke there. I just said lizard people.
Yeah, it works.
Sounds a lot like your Marv Albert.
I wish everyone could see you guys laughing and how cute it is.
Yes, we're so adorable. Cute. Well, take a picture. It'll last longer.
Okay. So I can trust that you're going to handle this with care and proper positivity and just excitement for everything related to Mission Impossible. Ethan Hunt?
Yep.
Okay, good. Okay. You need anything from me before I go? Maybe I'll come back with Mission Impossible
I need your
cookies.
Michael Hunt.
What would Mission Impossible cookies look like?
Jeremy Renner. It's like mashed dough.
Right. Picture a potato. Picture a potato.
Yeah,
the shape in the shape of a thumb.
Thanks for stopping by.
Bye.
Who else might stop by on this episode?
This is quite a mystery cast.
Oh,
who's that?
There's a knock at the door. It's Marv Albert.
Yes, from downtown.
He believes those.
I believe Hillary Clinton's a lizard person.
Damn it, Marv Albert. It's the worst thing you've done since biting that woman's face. Bye.
He was on bath salts.
We were talking about Happy Gilmore. It's a funny movie.
In 2018, are you sure?
Funny.
Time out. Are you sure?
Movie.
We were talking about Happy Gilmore in 2018.
Pretty sure.
That's right.
I want to say it came out the same day as Mr. Wrong, the Ellen DeGeneres comedy.
Who's Ellen DeGeneres?
And I instead went to see Mr. Wrong.
Because you were a big fan of Ellen DeGeneres.
I think it was because it had my boy Bill Pullman in it.
You love Bill Pullman.
I made the wrong call.
Mm. Happy Gilmore is a very funny movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jokes. It just seems like a bunch of friends got together and they just made a really sloppy, messy, silly movie. And it works and it's really funny. And even the stuff that's really terrible is just stupid and forgettable. There's nothing truly offensive about it, I don't think. The Bob Barker cameo is maybe the best real life celebrity cameo in any movie ever.
I would have to think about that.
I know, but I know. I'm putting you on the spot
Adam Sandler
right now.
Movie.
But I'm saying, you know, think about a lot of celebrities who come on themselves.
Yeah.
What funnier person Bob Barker coming on as himself to say those ridiculous lines and to get into a fight, like just being so disgusted by Happy Gilmore's terrible golf play that he has to fight him. It's really pretty great.
You describing like, oh, a bunch of friends getting together and screwing around. I'm like, well, that's every Adam Sandler movie, except in Happy Gilmore, they remembered to write jokes.
Well, exactly. And I feel like even, I don't know how this is going to make sense, but they're definitely,
you probably won't.
Billy Madison's a ridiculous movie on purpose. It's a movie that's all over the place. There's a musical number. There's a lot of things that are really, really ridiculous and silly about it. Happy Gilmore is their take on a sports movie. So it's a sports movie version of that. Later versions, of the same movie are they're either trying to be more Hollywood and like they're hitting the beats or the I can't even find the right words. I need more Monster energy drink.
Here it comes.
They're trying to hit the beats and the on page this happens, on page number this happens, and it is hollow and empty and rings false to me, whereas this movie I feel like is still really fun.
Also, like,
we're talking about Happy Gilmore.
For 2 seconds, think of the premise of Happy Gilmore. Like, they sat down, they're like, what if a guy who's really good at hockey then has to play golf?
Done.
Here's several million dollars to go shoot that. Can you get Julie Bowen? Okay, great. Pre-stardom Julie Bowen.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it's funny.
Also watched The Arrival again. These are all movies I'm just watching again.
The only reason I ask The Arrival is Chuck Sheen with some aliens.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I've never seen The Arrival, but I watched Arrival.
Arrival.
I really like Arrival,
starring Amy Adams and Brant.
And Brant from Ghost Protes and Rogue One. Also starring a potato, I believe. Oh no, that's still just Jeremy Renner.
Starring a potato as Brant.
Starring a big toe as a potato. Arrival, I watched it again for the first time, for the second time, and I really like it. It's got great music and great mood, and Amy Adams is really good in it, and I just like that it's this unique take on language and whatever. Obviously, Arrival's been talked about a lot on every podcast in the history of on Dougcast. But what I will say is this. So my wife, and I mentioned this to you before, so I'll just repeat the same dumb story. My wife's way into Westworld right now, and I'm not as into it. I like it fine. I think it's really, it's trying to do something. It's saying a lot of things, and I think that is noble and great that it's trying to be something and think outside the box. But I feel like it suffers from this Lost syndrome, which is my particular complaint with Westworld, and that they're really introducing a lot of stuff that just doesn't quite make sense, or when you really start to kind of break it down, it falls apart in your hand like sand. And then number two is that it's rough. Like a Daboob in Ghost Bros. And my second complaint with Westworld is that it is the most humorless show on TV. There is not one bit of anyone. It seems like no one's having fun. It seems like it wouldn't be fun to even make or shoot or whatever. And so I really like, my point with it, to bring that up, is to say this. I really like Arrival. And obviously Arrival is dealing with some really heavy stuff in terms of like loss and relationships and time and all that stuff. But it's kind of a very dry movie, a very serious movie.
Which is,
and that's fine,
appropriate for what it's about and kind of where it lands. But I agree that like it's not a movie I'm going to rewatch a lot of times.
And that's kind of my bigger point, right?
Yeah.
So it's so good, but I feel like for the rewatching element, that characteristic that you want to when you rewatch something, it needs to have something, some charm, some, doesn't have to be funny. I'm not looking for a sidekick character that's going to like crack jokes. We already have Brant for that in Ghost Protes One. And, but I need something
Dude's
a little
hilarious.
More, some lightness, some sort of optimism.
It's very sort of emotionally draining, that movie.
Yes, but it's great.
It's
really good.
Speaking of Amy Adams and shows on HBO.
Sharp Objects?
I watched the first episode.
How was it?
I don't know if I'm going to keep going.
How was Sharp Objects?
It's not that it's bad. It's just,
go on, tell me how it was.
Everything about it feels like a show that I've been seeing a lot the last few years, whether it's The Sinner on USA or Big Little Lies or whatever that show was on HBO. Like
Franklin and Bash.
I mean, you take a little bit of Franklin and Bash, a little bit of Rizzoli and Isles,
and a whole lot of
that show with Jerry O'Connell and Jim Belushi where they play lawyers. What was that one?
Good God.
It was a show. It lasted not a long time. CBS, I think. Mm. It was not a TNT joint. Mm. So it's not that it's bad. It's like it's well made by the same French guy who did all of Big Little Lies and Dallas Buyers Club and Wild. Reminds me a lot of Wild. Like, he has one style. And man, it just because as I was watching it, I was like, I might just not be in the mood for this.
Well, here's the truth. I mean, it's everyone acknowledges it's a TV renaissance. It's a great time for TV with
that's what I've heard.
Original programming on Netflix.
It's like
and
the
Hulu
golden age of TV.
Amazon. There are so many
the
options
Wire,
and so
the
many
Sopranos.
Choices. Family Ties is great.
Franklin and Bash.
Think about Family Ties for a second. It's way up
I'm
there.
I'm almost never not thinking about Family Ties.
I really wished. When I was a kid, I had a fantasy where I could be Alex, the boy. What's his name?
Brian Bonsall. Andrew?
Andrew. When he was first introduced, he was a baby.
Is it Andrew or Andy?
I think.
I mean, I know
the same.
That's technically, yeah. But what do they call him?
Yeah. And then, like, a season later, he's a four-year-old.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I really was hoping
precocious,
that they would.
Though.
Because I was probably eight or nine, and I'm thinking, well, if he's four, he went from baby to four, he'll live from four to eight.
Yeah.
I want to be.
Yeah.
Alex P. Keaton's younger brother,
was
Andy.
It, so what was the appeal? Like, what part of that world did you want?
The haircut.
Okay. Was it like, I'll get to hang out with Michael J. Fox?
Access
was it like,
to Tina Yothers.
Maybe Yothers will go for me?
The lesser Bateman, I thought, maybe might take a shine to me.
Jason?
Yeah.
Because he's the lesser Bateman.
It was Jason the lesser Bateman?
Yes. Justine, are you kidding?
Mm. Nick?
Killer comic timing.
I'm thinking Nick would pay attention to me.
Mallory.
Take me under his wing.
What a great characterization. No, he was funny. That show was great.
Then Family Ties is great. Golden Age of TV is my point.
Let's not kid ourselves.
My point is that there's so much, so many options on all the different platforms and channels and stuff that I don't need to, I don't know, if you're not into something, why are we keep watching it? And there's not even that element of the culture isn't talking about the proverbial water cooler TV show. That's gone because people are watching so many different things.
Yeah.
No one's like, oh my gosh, you see must-see TV on Thursday night, and that finale of Lost was with the guy in the white and the guy in the black, and they're in purgatory. Maybe, who knows? I don't know, Three Toes.
Are there even network shows that kind of break through?
I think the one, and I didn't watch it, but was that one, there is one.
Okay.
No, I'm being serious.
I know there are some that like kind of.
I think Modern Family for a little bit.
Yeah,
had
for
some
sure.
Of that. And
but even that was a few years ago.
It was a few years ago, but the most recent one was not Big Little Lies, but it has a name like that.
Mm, Pretty Little Liars.
No,
that wasn't it.
No.
Was it? Well, that one on Fox that shoots in Chicago, Empire. That was like big for a season.
Yeah, I'm.
But
I don't
nobody's
know. Like,
still talking
this
about
is,
it.
Obviously, this isn't a. Television.
How to
podcast.
Get away with murder?
No.
Revenge.
No, it's a thing. I think it's on ABC. And it takes place maybe in Chicago.
Chicago Fire. Chicago Hope. Chicago PD. The Beast.
ER.
The Beastly. One with the one with Kelsey Grammer as the mayor.
Boss. Please.
Two guys, a girl, and a pizza place.
I just pulled my phone out. I have no idea how to even look this up.
Show in Chicago. Ooh, Early Edition.
Early Edition.
I don't have much to talk about that I've seen.
Siri, what's the show in Chicago that's really popular right now? Let's see if she answers.
I'm not finding anything for Chicago playing nearby now.
Well, that's definitive.
Thanks for nothing, Siri.
Jerk.
That's why I'm banging Alexa. I don't have much to talk about. I did rewatch based on a recent column by Adam and Rob, where they talked about their favorite comedies, and Rob named My Cousin Vinny as his favorite comedy. And the show has like come up, the movie has come up on the show before, and I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not a huge My Cousin Vinny fan, because I think I saw it once, like when I was working at Blockbuster, and I was like, yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah. It's fine.
Let's put the bread in the oven and have dinner. Like, what's... So, I rewatched it, inspired by his love of it, and I definitely had a better time with it. Like, it was pretty entertaining, and Marissa Tomei is really, really great, and Joe Pesci is likable. Like, I didn't remember liking the two of them as much as I did.
Mm. Now, is it your favorite comedy of all time? Now?
Oh, it shot right to the top.
Awesome.
Fred Gwynne is really great in it, too. He's like, what's a ute? but yeah, I mean, I liked it a lot better than I remembered.
Is your biological clock ticking?
Like this.
You haven't
I was like, oh yeah, you blend.
You haven't even mentioned Macchio.
Macchio. This is like his one outside of Karate Kid, I feel like this, and I guess maybe The Outsiders, this is the one that people point to.
Right.
Completely overlooking Crossroads, where he plays a would-be blues guitarist.
Is that the one with Britney Spears?
Different Crossroads.
Okay.
Same title. This one involves a deal with the devil and the guitar, and it's directed by Walter Hill. And I may or may not have recently purchased it on iTunes for only $5. So I was like, a Walter Hill movie I don't own, and it's $5?
And it's starring Machio.
And it's got Machio and the devil? I want to say, like, Steve Vai plays the devil. So, you know, just refer to any poster on your older brother's wall, everyone.
I'm watching the Farrah Fawcett television show. The Cheryl Teagues.
I also, speaking of Claire Foy, remember that whole thing? Do you remember like when Claire Foy was all we could talk about?
This is the Foycast.
So I watched Unsane, the latest movie by Steven Soderbergh, a retired Steven Soderbergh, of course.
He's retired.
He retired and then he came out
and made
Unsane, his psychological thriller that he shot on an iPhone. And you can make a good movie on an iPhone, everyone, because I've seen two of them now, and they were both good.
Okay, what's your top two?
Tangerine number one.
Okay.
Unsane number two.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. Claire Foy, really, really good. Creative photography. I don't know that, like, the whole iPhone thing, it's more like see what I can do, not see what I should do. Mm. It allows for some interesting shots, maybe, and, like, some angles that I'm not positive you would get as easily with a regular camera. The story was okay. I mean, I was definitely involved and entertained. I think I was, I don't want to say let down because it's not a bad movie, but I didn't love it as much as I was hoping to love any Steven Soderbergh movie.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I heard it was so good and it was, I wanted it to be brilliant. It's just anytime you go into a Steven Soderbergh movie, you have slightly elevated expectations, or at least I
see a lot of law breakers in here.
That movie is awesome, by the way. And with the sequel gets so much love, and I do not like the sequel.
I haven't seen the sequel
as much. I like the first one a whole lot more.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for those.
Did he make the,
who I just
no,
offended.
He didn't direct,
he did not.
He just did a DP on the sequel though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And someone in his, like, crew made the sequel. Okay. It was somebody who's affiliated with him. I can't remember who. And the sequel's fine. It's not that I dislike it, but I really like the first movie a lot. The first movie kind of has a story, and the second one is more just like, let's celebrate dancing.
This Is Us. Sorry.
That's the show?
Yeah, isn't that a show that's, like, really popular right
now?
That's like a water 100%. Cooler show?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. Okay. No, I take that back. I watched the pilot.
I totally stepped on your
and I was like,
foy toes.
I'm good.
I apologize for stepping on your toes. I was looking it up. I found it.
You
this
stepped
is
right
us.
On my foys.
It's on NBC.
Yeah.
But that's the water cooler show that I think.
Oh,
that,
yeah, like, for
it's
sure.
The only
people
thing
love that, it and they cry.
But
and,
otherwise, it's like people even watching like Westworld or anything that's on Netflix.
Westworld
or HBO.
Kind of is. And then again, there's like there'll be like a Making a Murderer or something that will pop in a big way.
Well, the difference, I think, too, is that like a Netflix will release all the entire series at once, which was like so novel. And now it's becoming more of the norm. Whereas I think HBO still stretches out like it's going to be a premiere of what, you know, it's on Sunday night.
Right.
You have a little berry, you know, tickle your ass with a feather. That's called Silicon Valley. Which is also not the quality of that's gone down so much.
Yeah. I don't even think I finished the season.
I did not, honestly. Yeah. I liked it so much.
Me too.
Martin Starr and Camille Nanjiani were so great.
Yes.
And they're still great, but the show is just silly. It's stupid.
It repeats itself so much.
Right.
Like, oh, how are we going to get out of this one?
Right.
Oh, some weird luck. Okay, cool.
Sorry about that. Claire Foy, Steven Soderbergh.
Claire Foy, Unsane. Mm. See it.
Yes.
Or don't. I mean, it's your time. It's your life. Listen, I can't tell you what to do,
life
people.
Life is short, yeah.
Life is beautiful.
Mm.
I guess that's it. I was maybe going to talk about one other movie, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
Let's talk about Ghost Protocol.
Okay.
Ghost Protocol.
My favorite movie
your
of 2011.
Your favorite 2011 film.
I recommend everyone go back and listen to that podcast right now. Wait.
You have to scroll back 7 years.
Okay, now you're back. That's pretty much what I want to say about the movie. Patrick.
My 2011 was Super 8. Would that have been 2011?
Who can say?
I think it would have been.
There's no way to check.
Directed by J.J. Abrams, producer of Ghost Protes, directed Mission Impossible 3, didn't return to direct 4 because he was making Super 8. Do you see how it all fits together?
I do.
Love is the thing that connects us all.
Now, I remember Mission Impossible 1.
Yes.
Which I believe is called Mission Impossible 1.
Yeah.
I think they even put a 1 in. No, they didn't.
They did
you're indicating to me silently that they did not. You're furiously shaking your head right now.
We call that pantomime.
He's taking his pants off. I don't know. No, you're showing me a 1.
I put the pantsless in pantsless-a-mime.
That's actually not a 1. That is a wang.
Wang 1.
It's fine. Mission Impossible is fine.
Yeah.
It's got a couple set pieces and sequences that are memorable, even 30, no, not 30 years. How old is that movie? 96, right? Come out in
96.
Man,
only 22 years.
I'm really good. I'm really good.
Only 22 years.
Like him rappelling from the ceiling, right?
Correct.
Number
That's
two,
like the big, and the train at the end.
John Woo, just terrible. Just a piece of garbage. Although you seem to love it. This is my memory is that you love Mission Impossible 2, which is called Mission Impossible 2, correct?
Correct.
Is Mission Impossible 3 called Mission Impossible 3?
It is.
And then only with Ghost Protz that is said.
They lose the numbers and they start adding the nonsensical like
Ghost
subtitle.
Protocol, right? Rogue One, Fallout.
Just they mean
disavowed.
Nothing. They could be
right.
Interchangeable, basically.
Right. Absolutely. I don't remember Mission Impossible 3.
Okay.
And part of me thinks, in you talking about it, have I not seen Mission Impossible
3? I feel like 3? You have. It's good. It was J.J. Abrams' first job
film?
Directing, yeah,
okay.
After he kind of blew up on TV. And it's good in a lot of ways. I think it puts the series on the right path. I think Ghost Protocol is where it all kind of comes together. But 3 does a lot of important things, like it emphasizes the team dynamic.
Family.
Because the second one is just Tom Cruise, super spy, right?
Like, right.
So it establishes a team dynamic. It starts to establish the character of Ethan Hunt, who he becomes a little bit better.
Okay.
It does a lot of things right, but for me, Ghost Protocol is where this series kind of becomes what I think it is now. We have not seen the new one.
Right.
We're hearing good things.
Right.
It's probably my most anticipated movie of the summer, because I really like, in particular, these last two movies. So I can't say about the latest, but certainly Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation, I feel like, are very much of a piece. And Ghost Protocol is the one where it kind of falls into place in a lot of ways. Not only continuing to run with the team dynamic, but also the character of Ethan Hunt as sort of a... It's not that he's like the ultimate badass, which is kind of what he is in part two.
Sure.
It's like he does crazy shit because no one else will. And it's almost like a joke. I mean, it's not a joke because he really is doing all this crazy shit. And like, I'm talking about in the movie. I'm not talking about Tom Cruise, the actor. But like, they make a joke out of like, well, Ethan will do it.
Yeah.
It's,
well, especially in Rogue Nation.
Yes.
Yes.
And the movie's just become a little bit like lighter and a lot more fun. There are greater stakes, I would say, because again, the first movie is just about we have to get back the knock list because that has the name of all the spies.
Mm.
And the second movie is like I have to find the cure for. there's two names for the. There's like the poison has a name.
Mm, death sticks.
And the antidote has a name. Bellerophyll and...
Midichlorians.
It's so... Anyway, it's just about, like, how do I save Tandy Newton, right? Mm.
Why save her? She's a robot.
The third one is kind of like, how do I save Michelle Monaghan?
Mm.
There's
also
more to it than that, because it's the whole rabbit's foot thing.
Michelle Monaghan's great in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I just want to put that out there.
And that's the movie where they just acknowledge, like, the MacGuffin means nothing. They call it a rabbit's foot. They don't tell you what it is. All you have to know is people want it.
Is 3 introduction of Simon Pegg?
Yes.
And anyone else on the team? Well, I guess Jeremy Renner's the only one that's... Or Ving Rhames is in 2.
I don't know if Ving Rhames... He's in 1 and 2.
Okay. He's let's talk about Ving Rhames for 2 seconds.
Sure. Luther?
Ving Rhames is great in the things he is cast well in.
Pulp Fiction.
Out of sight, he is the same character in pretty much everything he's cast.
Yes.
I feel like when he's asked to act, or to say a line that's kind of outside that vein of him just being a cool badass, it really shows you that Ving Rhames cannot act. Now, I like Ving Rhames. I mean, sure. Obviously, in Pulp Fiction, he's wonderful, and Out of Sight is great.
Yes.
I loved him in the other thing you mentioned just now.
I like the fact that he's in most of these movies. I honestly can't remember if he's in three. Right. And I like, you know, I'm a sucker for that. So I like that. But I do feel like part of it is because when the first one was made, it was 96. Pulp Fiction was pretty recent.
Sure.
Ving Rhames was super hot. So it was like, well, let's get this guy in on the movie.
Right.
In 2011, when they're making Ghost Protocol, I don't know if they're calling Ving Rhames if he's not already established as Luther.
Right. Okay.
But there's a great scene in 3 that I feel like kind of sets the table for the next two movies, and that is there's like a whole – they have to get something out of a building.
Okay.
And it all happens off camera.
Like, okay.
Ethan goes into the building. We cut to the outside. Simon Pegg and maybe some other characters are like having a conversation, and all of a sudden Ethan comes busting out a window and it's like, go, go, go. And they take off and we never see what happened inside the building.
That's so great.
And yeah, I feel like that – the spirit of that sequence really kind of lays the groundwork for what 4 and 5 become, which is like just way more fun and entertaining, not trying to be gritty, not trying to be edgy, not trying to be like dark or even cool.
Right.
They're way more retro than cool, in particular Ghost Protocol, because Brad Bird is such a retro guy.
Yeah. What I liked about it too, and again, we're getting kind of, I guess, 30,000 foot.
Oh yeah.
Ghost Protocol.
Like the height of the Burj Khalifa.
That's correct. With Ghost Protes and also Rogue Nation. I want to say Rogue One. And I apologize.
Do.
I guarantee
it's
I will say
Ethan
Rogue One.
It's when Ethan Hunt steals the plans for the Death Star.
That there's an element, this spirit, this joie de vivre of everything that can go wrong will go wrong, which obviously is not new to any sort of action set piece movie. But these movies, this franchise takes it to another level in that it is misstep after misstep after misstep, oftentimes no one's fault, technology breaking down constantly, that they keep on having to, they find themselves backed into a corner and keep on having to find new and clever and unique ways to get out of a jam. And they do it. And as you pointed out during the movie, I don't know if this is where you want to mention it, I'm putting you on the spot right now, I apologize, but about how the set piece is never quite, it's not the finale of the movie.
Right.
So.
Well, and it's not even the ultimate end game for whatever the thing is that they're trying to accomplish.
Right.
Like in the Burj Khalifa sequence in Ghost Protocol, it's not like climb
which
outside.
It's arguably the biggest set piece of the movie.
And the best.
And the best, I mean, set piece.
It alone makes the movie worth seeing. I think there's a lot of really fun stuff in the movie, and that movie's
absolutely
super entertaining, and obviously we'll talk about it. But even if the rest of the movie was not great,
right,
if just the Burj Khalifa sequence was as is, it's like mandatory viewing.
Right.
Even that isn't like, Ethan, you got to go outside this building to disarm the nuclear bomb.
Right.
It's like, you got to go outside to get into the server room so we can control the elevator so
right
we can pull off this con.
Right.
Because as soon as he comes back in from outside,
they still have to do the mission.
The scene's not over.
No.
Exactly.
The mission is starting. That's like the right preface right to the actual mission. And Rogue Nation had a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Where it's the thing, you have to go into the cooled storage.
It's always
tank
about the server.
The
you
server.
You always
got to
access
right
the server.
And it's so silly and so stupid. And if you just acknowledge that and kind of move past it, you'll yeah have so much fun. But you have to go in the tank and hold your breath.
Just so Simon Pegg can get through security.
Right. So you can start the mission.
Right, exactly.
Right. So that's such a refreshing sort of and I'll say this also. We're not talking about – I don't want to talk about The Last Jedi right now, aside from the fact that it's – I think it's awesome. I love it. But even that movie is, I think –
we just lost 50 more subscribers.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
But you can just blame it on me, how I'm the dumb –
I've said it's awesome before, too.
I'm just saying –
fuck, there goes 50
I'm
more.
I'm just saying I'm the dumb of the
F-less movie
family. They
were sticking around for me, hoping that I was anti-Last Jedi.
Listen.
I contributed money to that remake, people. What do you want?
Listen. Just listen to me, everyone. Okay. Patrick, obviously, is a movie guy. He knows movies. I'm brought on because I'm – eye candy.
You're sounding a little bit like the villain from Rogue Nation.
I'm ear candy. I'm ear candy. Mr. Hunt, I'm right here. But listen, I'm not a smart person in a lot of ways, especially with movies. So I will go on record and say, I love The Last Jedi, but I will fucking defend The Last Jedi.
Oh,
and
yeah,
say
yeah
it's great, and
yeah
there's lots of great smart reasons why I like it. But my point in bringing up The Last Jedi, aside from the fact, is to say that I really like that movie. Another movie I've watched 3 times in the last month. I didn't mention it earlier in the show because I'm like, let's keep this non-controversial. And yet, here I am.
You always
got to
get controversial.
Of my own shit.
Man.
That
you always have to be edgy.
Even that movie, I think, borrows from this franchise. And again, it's not this franchise. This franchise didn't invent it, but it's sort of like every plan that you have, find the code breaker. Shit, can't find the code breaker. It's just getting yourself out of jam after jam after jam. And no franchise does it better than, I think, Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Especially, like you said, the last two, 4 and 5, Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation, in that they are... It's not, and by the way, it's not just about getting out of a jam. It's not just about technology failing, like the glove failing, so he's hanging from one glove off the Burj Khalifa. It's not just about how they can't use masks because the mask maker machine breaks, or they can't do this because some other technology breaks. They can't make it there in time, so they have to do something. It's constant improv in the movie. It's also, I kind of lost my train of thought, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, again, that is so much more dramatically interesting and engaging when it's like, uh-oh, how are we going to get out of this now? Rather than just like everything works, everything's cool. I mean, think about, again, the Fast and the Furious movies, right? We were talking while we were watching one of these Mission Impossible movies about the most recent Fast and Furious movie. And it's like, we watch stuff play out, but everything goes according to plan because everyone's awesome.
Right.
And they are not going to not be awesome. And the thing about Ethan Hunt is, like, he's awesome, but he has to work really, really hard at being awesome.
And definitely that scene in Rogue Nation, it's the swimming scene where basically Simon Pegg nominates him. I think he would have done it regardless, but Simon Pegg, it's such a foregone conclusion that he can do it. What do you? Why are we even having this conversation?
Right.
Like, okay,
you only
2 minutes,
have to hold
3
your
minutes,
breath.
4 minutes, who cares?
Right.
It's like, it's going to get done.
Right.
And let's just get on with the mission.
And Tom Cruise has even found the way to, like, react to that. Like, yes, I know I'm going to do it, but also, like, what the hell?
I'm in this jam again.
And it's funny without ever, like, mugging.
No.
And that's who the character has become.
It's a careful tightrope that they're walked to in terms of the facial reactions. A lot of both recent movies. By the way, just a quick side note. This is a Ghost Protocol podcast, or is it Ghost Protocol Rogue Nation?
It's really Ghost Protocol, but we did watch both back-to-back because I wanted to determine once and for all which one I like better.
But, I mean, can we talk about both of them?
Of course we can.
Okay.
This is the lead-up to Fallout.
Can we talk about other movies, too?
I mean...
Like Last Jedi.
Oh,
I liked it in Ghost Protocol when they rode the Fathiers out of the...
Is Claire Foy in The Last Jedi? Because...
Ooh, This Is Us! there's, like, jokes in my head that kind of stomp on the thing
writing
that I
this
say.
Movie walks the tightrope.
It walks the tightrope of, the faces they make. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That it's not mugging. It's not, I mean, there's a couple sequences where there's a line that's said that doesn't really need to be said, or a cutback to a character's reaction that doesn't need to be cut back. But as you pointed out, maybe it's something, a higher level editing decision, especially when it's playing in a theater, to give an audience, especially a group audience, time to kind of absorb and react to what's on screen, as opposed to watching it just two people in a basement holding hands, because I'm back in Chicago.
That wasn't my hand.
That, ooh, it was so veiny. It's terrible. Cut that part out, please. Anyway, so but they make these faces, and it's the, like, the, what, the WTF face that he makes, like when he's escaping from the hospital room from the Russian police officer. And he's on the ledge, and the guy's like, "You're going to come back in." And he's like, he literally cannot see a way out. And that's kind of the theme of both of these movies, is like, we are doing the only thing we can do to get to the end game.
That's what makes it so much goddamn fun.
There's no other option. Either we have to, like, assassinating the Prime Minister in Rogue Nation, which is an option, or not. It's like, that's the only option. And just like when he's escaping from the hotel room, it's obviously much smaller stakes than assassinating a world leader, but it's like, I'm either going to come back in the room or I'm not. And if I'm not going to, what do I do? Do I jump in the dumpster that's 3 stories down? Or do I wait for that truck to come by and I grab my belt and I, you know, basically zip line down? And then, in the spirit of why these movies are, I think, better, and they've kind of elevated themselves from the first couple entries in the franchise, is that he lands on the truck, falls off it.
Biffs it completely.
Biffs it completely. I love it. Or do I? No, I don't. I don't like that, but I love it. I love it. And that's, again, it's that things are never quite perfect. And again, like you said, in the Fast and Furious movies, it would be perfect. It would be It would be Vin Diesel.
Right.
Being
like Triple X, just like, I'm going to go down this wire on my belt. But then the wire collapses because he's 300 pounds of sausage. And he just splatters.
He is Superman. Listen, there is one sequence, the Sawyer sequence at the beginning, where everything kind of does go right until it just...
until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't, right? Where he throws down the inflatable bag.
Which
at
even
the end,
that is like...
And fires the guns. And
it's
like
awesome
really
right off the bat. And I remember seeing this, you know, we saw Sawyer in the trailers, and this is when Josh Holloway is very hot because Lost is
who's,
a thing.
I'm sorry, Josh Holloway.
Sawyer.
I don't know Josh Holloway.
He's in the trailers, and so I go into this movie being like, oh, Sawyer's on the team. And then this movie kills him within 5 minutes. But the sequence leading up to him dying is awesome, where he jumps off the building, shooting backwards.
Right.
Again, in one take.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I could turn my body in midair. I'd be like, bam!
Yeah, exactly. and then inflates the thing. Sorry. And like, yeah, he's obviously a badass and then gets killed. Right. But the thing I love, too,
about
the...
He had that assassin proximity detector on his phone. Thank goodness.
The thing I love about the scene where Tom Cruise, like... zip lines down the thing and then hits the truck is then he lands on the ground and his reaction is so great because it's so much about like, holy shit, I'm alive. Like he wasn't positive that that was going to work.
Right.
And that is what makes these movies so much fun is yes, Ethan Hunt is superhuman, right? Because he's doing ridiculous stuff, but he's always also kind of grounded in a reality that we can recognize.
Well, his grounding isn't necessarily his physicality, because his physicality is undeniable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's always going to survive. There's a bit in Rogue One Nation, where he is drowning and needs to be saved.
And is saved the best possible way.
With a beautiful
by Rebecca Ferguson.
Siren. But aside from that, I can't think of a situation in which his... He is vulnerable. Like his physicality is undeniable. It's almost it's sort of in the attitude toward his physicality. In the do I have to do this? Will I survive? And that I think makes it even more unique.
And I like too that, and this is I guess going back to Rogue Nation. So I guess we're kind of talking about both. But
I'm just curious what post you're going to put on the site.
Both Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation. Start doing this thing where I feel like, you know, the series doesn't really come into its own until, again, half of Part 3 and definitely Ghost Protocol. And it is kind of like the Fast and Furious franchise in that way where it's not really until Part 5 where you're like, oh, this is what the series is. And when you think back to what it was, because rewatching Mission Impossible 1, like the big stunt is he jumps away from an aquarium. And he has to lower himself down from the ceiling. How's he going to do it? Like, what? That Ethan like does that to make his breakfast in these movies? Like, that's
I'm out of marmalade.
Nothing. So it's like, oh, he has to steal DVD players. Oh no, how's he going to do it?
They have to hack the moon. That's the next movie. Hack the moon.
At the same time that Mission they're kind Impossible. Of establishing the what these movies are in 4 and 5, they're also going out of their way to sort of subvert what they are. And in 4, you kind of already mentioned it, it has so much to do with the failure of technology that, you know, James Bond could get away from shit because he had all these gadgets and they worked and they were awesome and he could always win because he had the best gadgets. And I didn't watch the Mission Impossible show. It was a little bit before my time, and I never watched it in reruns, but I know, you know, masks and cool tech and spy shit was a big part of it. And Part 4 says, okay, but what if all of it goes wrong, including at the very beginning when it's like, this mission will self or this message will self-destruct, and then it doesn't.
Right.
Like, every single thing goes wrong, and it just makes it so much more interesting that the glove doesn't work, right?
Right.
Or at the end. Where he has to come up, I guess we're spoiling, you know, Ghost Protocol. What I love about the sequence at the end on the weird, what do you call that? It's like a car.
Yeah, I don't even know. A car elevator?
Yeah, I mean, things are moving up and down. And it's such a, that sequence is like this whole movie sort of encapsulated. Because it's always about like, this thing is just outside of my reach. Here's a new obstacle.
Right.
Like, it's all of that happening in one scene. And what I love about it is that the solution is ultimately the most analog solution, which is just like, I guess I'll drive the car to the bottom.
Right.
It's like, fuck it. And it's...
Well, sparked by also the ultimate sacrifice of the villain.
Right.
Just like who believes so firmly in his, you know,
And it's just, how am I, it's like, fuck you, things are going to blow up because I'm going to be at the bottom now and you have to get this briefcase, and how can you? You don't have time. And Tom Cruise is like, well, I can think of one thing.
Well, again, it goes to the whole thing, like, I need, there's no other options. Right. There's how can I survive that?
So here goes, right. And he just drives a car. It reminds me, these two things are not similar, because I think in this case, Mission Impossible does this better overall, but there's that great scene in Point Break, which is like one of the greatest action movies of all time. Yeah.
Okay. Just want to clarify.
These men are extreme. I believe these men are extreme athletes like me or something. I'm trying to remember the exact quote from the trailer. There's just that great moment.
Kevin
where,
Utah.
where Keanu Reeves, it's near the end when Patrick Swayze jumps out of the plane and Keanu Reeves has no parachute and just goes, fuck it, and jumps out of the plane with no parachute. And it's such a great character moment, and that's Ethan Hunt all the time. Where it's just like, this is what I got to do.
Right.
Part 5 subverts it a little bit in sequences like you're talking about, where after he drowns, we get 5 minutes where...
he's human.
Where Ethan Hunt loses his superpowers, right? And he tries to slide across the car, and he fucks up, and he can't drive real well, you know? Like... He stops being Ethan Hunt for a few minutes, and it's the movie, I feel like, you know, pulling the rug out from under the typical Tom Cruise persona a little bit.
Yeah.
So, Ghost Pros.
Ghost Pros. Right?
Here's something I learned pretty recently, and I guess I should have known this at the time. I listened to a podcast called Blank Check, and they recently...
how do they spell check?
C-H-E-C-K. Q? They recently... they do... like director's series, and they recently did Brad Bird. So I was listening to their Ghost Pros episode, and they told me a lot of stuff I didn't know about Ghost Pros, including...
Is the Brad Bird one episode, or is it they do...
No, they do each movie.
Okay.
One episode per movie, per director. So the Ghost Pros episode, they filled me in on a bunch of stuff I didn't know, which is this. At the time that Ghost Pros came out, Mission Impossible 3 had underperformed a little bit, didn't make as much as the first two movies. This was also like post... Tom Cruise split with Paula Wagner, I believe, his producing partner. Scientology stuff was real hot. The couch jumping had happened. Tom Cruise was just, I think, more of a, not a liability, but certainly more of a risk to Paramount.
That's not right.
And so their feeling was, we don't want to do another one of these. Like, he cannot be the future of this franchise. We need to kind of phase out Tom Cruise and Ethan Hunt. Which is why they bring in Jeremy fucking Renner to essentially take the mantle the way he was supposed to with the Jason Bourne franchise, and that didn't work out. So he was going to be the new hero of this franchise, which is insane to me because he's essentially the same age. It's not like you're trading up. Like,
no, Jeremy Renner's much younger than Tom Cruise, I think.
To me, he's the same age.
Well, Tom Cruise drinks all the baby blood. Right. There's a lot of miles. There's one scene, I think, in Rogue Nation where he is doing some face... and he is much better in profile because you're like straight on and there's so many lines. Like, not even talking wrinkles. I'm just talking lines.
Like when you get out of the shower and you look at your thumb.
Right. It's all pruny. That's basically Renner. Yeah.
He's got a prune face.
That's insane to me because Jeremy Renner, I don't know him personally. I don't wish him ill.
I do. I don't wish him ill, but I know him.
Yeah.
He's all right.
You go way back. And I don't wish him ill. I wish him a lucrative career as best he can get it. But man, that guy has a charmed career so far. I mean, the fact that he's an Avenger as Hawkeye, he was tried to take over that franchise, did not obviously work, like you mentioned. Yep. He's in the Mission Impossible franchise. Dude just seems to have a lot of chances. And I wonder why sometimes, because he's not a bad actor at all, but he's not a very good actor either. He's not a very novel or unique. There's nothing about the lines he delivers that that blow me away or that make me think, wow, I'm moved, or things are different because of the way he said that or the way he delivered that line or whatever. He's just a very vanilla sort of...
with the exception of The Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker,
I don't think there's ever been a movie where I was like, wow, Jeremy Renner really added something to this movie.
Not to go back to... Last Jedi, but I love...
Oh, he's playing the new...
he's the new Darth.
He's the new Maul. Last Jedi. He's the human form of Snoke.
Adam Driver, I'm a big fan of. I was when I saw him first in Girls, and I haven't seen him in too much stuff. I don't think he's made too much stuff. I know he did that Ben Stiller movie.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, yeah?
If you looked at his IMDb, there's been a few years where he just made a lot of movies.
Okay. But my point, and to bring that up, it's not to talk about Last Jedi, because I know some people don't like it. Those people are crazy. But it's also to say that there's ways he delivers a line and reactions he gives and performances that he does that really just blow my hair back. Where I think to myself, now I am not an actor. I would never claim to be one. I don't want to be an actor. But I would, my little test to myself is, if I was given that same line, it could be just a generic line like, your parents are nobody. How would I deliver it? And again, I'm not a trained actor, but I would deliver it like, your parents are nobody. Mm-hmm. And he, the way he delivers it, it's like, oh, it like, it cuts to your core. And it's like, it's so hurtful. And then the next line he says, but it, you matter to me. I think that's the whole sequence with him and Rey.
You had me at hello.
I'm spoiling Last Jedi, by the way.
No, you had me at hello.
You had me at hello. My point is that there's an
Show
actor
me the money.
Who
Show
is
me
really
the money, Rey.
Trying or doing something different or bringing something to the table. And it also helps that he's very interesting looking.
Yes.
Jeremy Renner is also kind of interesting looking, but I feel like his acting is straight from...
Are feet really interesting looking?
He is a twice-baked potato and who delivers a line exactly the way you think the actor is going to deliver a line. And my point is not... I feel bad for like just piling out at this point, but just...
He's doing fine.
I just... There's nothing about him that's kind of like, yes, Renner.
The notion of this franchise continuing with him as its hero.
It's crazy.
Tom Cruise is this franchise.
Even going back to the Bourne franchise, Matt Damon, I don't think of Matt Damon as an action star necessarily, right. Although I guess he is in a ton of action movies. And
Green Zone? Is that an action movie?
I never saw it. But there's something so charismatic. Say what you want about Ben and Matt. They're two of the most charismatic MFers, and Matt Damon specifically. I know that he, you know, there's a lot of love hate with him, and even Saving Private Ryan. His whole like story. It's his story, right?
Yeah.
That he about you know his brothers and stuff. But man, the guy has a $1 million laugh and smile when he get like has this whole face laugh thing. Oh, another movie I saw recently was The Departed. Ooh. Holy moly, that movie is so good.
Let's go back to the beginning of the show.
Okay, rewind.
Yeah.
You, this is tape, I'm assuming.
So I record all of these.
Press
on
record
tape.
And record.
You've been watching The Departed too much, fucking kid. Press record
and play at the same time. Departed, I put on. It's on Netflix. I'm like, I remember watching this movie.
Yeah.
This is all I want to say about Departed.
Okay.
If you want to talk more about it, that's totally fine, because I would love to talk about Departed.
Let me put my booties on.
I watched it when it came out, and I liked it.
I'm
going to
sneak in your house.
But, the very end. My booties. And I remember liking it, because obviously Martin Scorsese is, you know, an excellent director. It's an all-star cast. And I remember watching it for the first time, being like, yeah, it's good. I watched it again on Netflix. Man, it's such a great movie. It is a really, really, really great movie. And everyone in it does a really great job. So what do you want to say about The Departed?
The notion that Jeremy Renner is the future of this franchise and not Tom Cruise is bananas to me. And yet, knowing that, if you kind of think through the movie and the way that his character is set up, where he's just sort of introduced as this potentially pencil-pushing company man, and then slowly it's teased out that, oh, he's more than that, right? Mm. Until we get the reveal where
him
and Tom Cruise like draw on each other, and it's like, oh, Brandt is a badass, just like Ethan Hunt.
Lillian Brandt.
Oh, god damn it.
Ethan Hunt is not the best name, but Brandt, like William, like we're replacing with William Brandt.
Ethan Hunt, they inherited from a TV show.
Oh, okay.
Brandt, they made up.
Right.
That's super interesting. So I guess what ends up happening, according to this podcast, is...
This podcast?
Blank check. So...
QUE?
Halfway through production, they're still writing the script. They had shot like a lot of the big action set pieces, but none of the connective tissue. And so that's why Ghost Protocol, like, isn't a movie so much as it is like a series of
set pieces for sure.
And the set pieces are amazing, and they just barely hang together with a bunch of nonsense. And that's because they didn't have a script, so they just had all these sequences, and they're like, all right, how do we connect all these? That's why the mystery is kind of dumb, and the reveal of like the pulling off the mask and the sandstorm is like, huh, why is that the thing? Like, because nobody knew, right? I'm still convinced, and I've never heard this anywhere else, like Josh Holloway was supposed to have a bigger part and like he was supposed to be the one when they pulled a mask off, like that it's supposed to be Josh Holloway, and it's like, oh, double agent. But they've done double agents so many goddamn times.
Well, in that way, it almost would feel like a Bond movie in terms of like everyone. There's a lot of secret agents.
Oh, the first three Mission Impossible movies, I think, are all like former IMF guys. The villains are all like
they've done it enough times. It is like a. It's four or five people that make up the entire IMF.
Right.
You know?
Well, because they're constantly having to go rogue.
Right. Because of a rogue nation.
Right, exactly.
Which nation? We don't know.
So the stuff barely hangs together. So they bring in Christopher McQuarrie because he had worked with Tom Cruise on Valkyrie.
That's a good movie.
I still haven't seen it.
It's not going to like make
be
your
the
favorite
only Tom
movie,
Cruise movie I've never
but it's,
seen.
It's actually good. It's good. Yeah.
Okay. I think it is the only Tom Cruise movie I've never seen.
Mm. Anyway. Have you seen TPS?
No, you know what? I haven't seen that one either. You're right.
You haven't seen Taps?
Why don't you just say Taps? By the way, that's the best part of the Mission Impossible 2 Blu-ray, is that that is on there.
But the Ben Stiller, Tom Cruise MTV Movie Awards sketch.
Yes.
That's such a funny sketch.
It is. So they bring in Christopher McQuarrie, and Christopher McQuarrie's first thing is like, Tom Cruise, this franchise is Tom Cruise. Like, I'm not doing this unless this is Ethan Hunt. This is his movie. And so they kind of allow it him to pivot it back to Ethan Hunt. And so, again, according to what they say on Blank Check, Renner's left with nothing to do at the end of the movie, which is why they invent the whole more fan thing that Erica keeps mentioning.
Oh, yeah.
That he needs a role in this finale. And so they invent that for him.
Wait, they bring in Christopher. I'm not following the timeline. Christopher McQuarrie did Rogue Nation, but
correct.
In Brad Bird's movie, Christopher McQuarrie already said.
Christopher McQuarrie came in as a screenwriter to fix things halfway through production.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Because Tom Cruise had a relationship with him from Valkyrie. So they're like, we need someone to
come
in.
Oh, I saw Valkyrie. That's good.
Yeah. Are we just doing this? I think it's the only Tom Cruise. So they need a screenwriter to come in and like, how do we fix all this? They bring in Christopher McQuarrie. His thing is like,
gotcha. That
makes sense. We're not giving this to Renner. This is Tom Cruise's thing.
Renner definitely has this part in both 4 and 5 where he is challenging. It's really, really annoying. As soon as you realize what's going on, you can't not notice it. And it's not like super, it's super obvious. So it's not like something that you have to really look for. But it's Jeremy Renner challenging or questioning Ethan Hunt's decisions.
Right.
And in Ghost Protocol, it makes sense because some of the stuff that he's asking them to do is crazy. And Jeremy Renner Brandt is the new character to the mix, new to the team. So he's like, I'm an analyst. I used to be a field agent, but stuff, you know, hit the fan. So now I'm an analyst and I just don't.
More fan.
I'm more a fan. So, but even my past experience, it makes sense. My past experience, because stuff hit the fan, that I don't want to take any chances. Stick to the mission. We'll live to fight another day. And obviously, Ethan Hunt's character is like,
he's all like, I shot a kid.
And he just said, no, this is it. This is the ball game. There's no tomorrow. There's no next game. So in Ghost
Mission
Protocol,
Impossible, colon, no tomorrow.
No tomorrow. That there's an element that makes sense in Ghost Protocol. Like, what are you doing? I have the briefcase. I'm going to hold out the window. And he's like, think, and it's kind of a little silly because, you know, he's an analyst. So it's like, think through all the scenarios in which I'm wrong. And he can't think of a scenario in which he's wrong. So he brings it back in. Now, in Rogue Nation, they take that and amp it up 12 degrees.
Which makes even less sense because in Rogue Nation, he's working with them.
Right. But at every turn, he and Ving Rhames are obviously, they're not in the field. They're kind of like in the CIA and or in like a van, like tracking or giving directions. And just constantly challenging and questioning Ethan Hunt, saying, what are you doing? You know, we can't do that. And it's kind of, I get that there needs to be that character in a movie to.
It works once.
It does.
Maybe twice.
But man, it's pretty relentless.
Yes.
So Brad Bird's direction.
Yes.
I love Brad Bird. Less so.
I like Brad Bird.
Yeah. No, I mean, he made Iron Giant, Ratatouille, Ghost Protocol. You talk about 1, 2, 3 movies.
Incredibles.
That's what I say.
Iron Giant, Incredibles,
yes,
Ratatouille, Ghost Protocol.
First four movies, I thought the guy was untouchable.
Yeah.
I just thought this is four of the best, not best movies, but just like almost flawless movies. I mean, Incredibles is so great. Ratatouille is so wonderful.
I might like Incredibles less than a lot of people.
An Iron Giant. Oh, look at you. How special you are.
I just want people to notice me for being different. What's the big deal?
You just don't like Craig T. Nelson. You just don't. You're still hating on Coach and Dauber all these years later. Iron Giant is great. Iron Giant is a really. It's a small little movie. It's a throwback to the Cold War 50s, 60s, and it's the whole B-movie aesthetic, and just it's so wonderful. I like The Incredibles a lot. I'm not crazy like you. Ratatouille is also really, really great. I just love its message. Same with Incredibles. I like the messages that they're putting out. And Ghost Protocol is his first live action movie. And it's like, I mean, Brad Bird used to work for The Simpsons, right? He used to be like,
he worked on The Simpsons. Yeah. He did Family Dog on Amazing Stories.
And
he worked for Disney.
And now he's making Ghost Protocol. And it's like, man, this guy can do no wrong. And then he makes Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland.
I believe that's his next movie after Ghost Protocol.
Yeah.
And I remember being so stoked to see it because it's George Clooney. It's a Disney.
Well, and it had all that mystery box bullshit.
Right.
Where we're like, we don't even know what this is. We just know Brad Bird has a new.
And Brad Bird at that point was just
futuristic sci-fi movie called Tomorrowland. And what is it? Yeah.
And I remember when it came out, I remember missing it opening weekend and getting panned
really
hard. And it really kind of took the urgency out of my, for me to see it myself. So I saw it probably a year later.
Yeah. I think I rented it from like a Redbox.
Yeah. And boy, it's not very good at all.
I have been wanting to revisit it again from listening to the Blank Check episode on it because they were way nicer to it than I remember being.
What I do remember about the movie is that it's not like offensive or it's not doing anything that's really outrageous. It's kind of boring and kind of like just silly, just stupid, just like a stupid movie.
Well, I think it's a case where he had a lot of ideas again and wants to say a lot, but he's not able to do it as well as he does in his first three movies. And that's one of the interesting things about him, especially in his work in animation. And one of the reasons why I don't love Incredibles 2, I liked it just fine, but like it's essentially The Incredibles minus all of the interesting ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The action sequences are done really well. Like he does that really well, as we can see in Ghost Protocol. But like Iron Giant, Incredibles, Ratatouille all have some really big ideas.
Yes.
Somewhat challenging ideas for any Hollywood movie, in particular an animated film. They're not ideas that you are used to being presented with in mainstream animated entertainment at all. So it's interesting then that he comes on to do Ghost Protocol, his first live action movie, and this is a movie with essentially no ideas. Like, and I don't say that
it's not
to
a
insult the movie.
Right.
Yeah, it's like an engine designed to entertain, and that is it.
Mm.
The one idea is like what they come out and say at the end, which is like everything went wrong except for us, the team. We can depend on people, right? Which flies in the face of some of what he says then in Tomorrowland, but kind of doesn't. I don't know. It's way less sort of thematically weighty than any of his other movies. But I love the fact that, you know, this series is so interesting in a lot of ways. And a big part of that is because Tom Cruise seems to handpick really interesting directors. You have Brian De Palma making the first one, making like one of his two big commercial movies, right? This and Untouchables are like his two
Snake
biggest
Eyes.
Commercial movies. Then he goes with John Woo, which, you know, in 2000 seemed like a great idea. Like John Woo was hot. He had made Face Off. He was the big name in Hong Kong action cinema. So I get wanting John Woo to take on a Mission Impossible movie. Then he takes this guy, J.J. Abrams, who's making all this noise in TV, and is like, let's kick him up to the majors. And he was right. I mean, the dude's doing Star Wars now, right? Mm-hmm. So he's...
And Star Trek.
That's right, yeah. He is a giant Hollywood commercial director. And Tom Cruise kind of pulled him up. Then he decides to go with Brad Bird, this animated filmmaker who had never made a live-action movie. Christopher McQuarrie is probably like, I don't want to say the least interesting pick, because I really like Christopher McQuarrie, and I like Way of the Gun a lot, and I really like Jack Reacher, but it's like the one that on paper you're like, huh, who? And yet he made a really kick-ass movie with Rogue Nation. Brad Bird, you know, when I hear people talk about Ghost Protocol or just Brad Bird in general, they talk about, well, he's such a good visual storyteller. And it's one of those things that like, it's this expression that we just throw around when we're talking about movies without ever really thinking about what that means. Because shouldn't every filmmaker be a visual storyteller? It's a visual medium, right? And I know they're not all.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Smith, not a visual storyteller.
Right.
He has characters say things and then films them saying it, but it's more about the dialogue moving the story forward rather than the visuals. But Brad Bird, you know, I don't know that. Obviously, he's carrying something over from animation. I don't know what it is, because it's not like his animated films are just about visuals necessarily, but there is a certain language to them. If you think about The Incredibles and the way that that movie moves and the way that the action is sort of choreographed in that movie, which is easier to do in animation, even though I think that movie costs like $200 million or something. I can't believe how expensive animation is. But that really translates to Ghost Protocol, where right off the bat, I mean, he's trying to find new ways of shooting action. And I think Christopher McQuarrie kind of picks up from there as well. I don't think he does it as well as Brad Bird. But I think he's trying to find new ways to stage things, new ways to show things. Even that motorcycle chase in Rogue Nation, like, he's trying to find a new way to spin a motorcycle chase that we've seen a million times.
I think I think you're right, but I think Christopher McQuarrie, he has a little more reliance. Well, I don't know if it's more reliance on CGI than Brad Bird, or if the CGI is just not done as well as with Brad Bird's version. Because I know that there's CGI in Ghost Protocol, but there's a couple sequences in Rogue Nation that feel like every action movie.
In particular,
ever.
The water
sequence, the car flipping, the physics of it flipping. Just kind of like doesn't. Yeah. And I think maybe it speaks again to Brad Bird. I don't know much about the behind the scenes stuff of Ghost Protocol, but
just ask me. I'm pretty much an expert.
what did Blank Check say? But just he is an old fashioned director. Obviously, his aesthetic is set in the 50s and 60s. That's The Incredibles. That's even Ratatouille has that element of like old timey France, not old timey, but like new wave France, and Iron Giant, obviously.
Right.
So maybe he's less reliant on, like, he wants to do it in camera. Mm-hmm. He wants to have the sequence be, you know, we can remove lines and remove wires and stuff like that, but let's not animate the whole car flipping. Whereas maybe Christopher McQuarrie is just like, I don't know how to do this. Let's just animate the car flipping. I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing here. Just real quick, I want to say one of my favorite, I recently also rewatched Ratatouille. My kids, obviously, were watching a lot of animated movies. We're on vacation. Ratatouille's on. The end sequence, and it speaks to what you said before about Brad Bird's big ideas, Iron Giant, obviously, about the other, and Incredibles about special, and Ratatouille is also about kind of being special, and where does talent come from? And I will say the critic Anton Ego, voiced by
Peter O'Toole,
the final write-up, the review he gives, I feel like it's one of the best statements in any movie. Not ever, but in the last X number of years, were about how a singular, unexpected experience. And I misunderstood what Gusteau said about a great cook. Not everyone can be a great cook, but a great cook can come from everywhere, from anywhere. And I'm just like, I'm blown away by it. Even having seen it now probably a dozen times, that sort of Brad Bird is what's missing from Tomorrowland, and maybe even what's missing from Ghost Protocol, because again, like you said, it's just about the visual. But again, speaking of visuals, Incredibles, not just the action set pieces, but think about Ratatouille, how he shoots, how he stages France. And how he stages a kitchen. That's an action sequence. It's not fighting, but it's like when the choreography of a kitchen in this high-end restaurant, it's really... I wouldn't even know where to start. You know what I'm saying? Right. Obviously, we're not directors, but like, how do you even begin to go there? And that's Brad Bird's wheelhouse.
And again, Brad Bird, Ratatouille is a crazy story because he came into that movie way late.
Did he?
He was not the original director.
I didn't know that.
They fired the original director who like had the idea for the movie, and they brought in Brad Bird, who did it in like a crazy short amount of time, given what he had to do. Anyway, just the way that he shoots and stages that Burj Khalifa sequence, which again is like the best thing in the movie. And I've seen the movie a couple times, not that many times, and I was just laughing through the whole thing.
Oh gosh.
Because you don't know how else to respond with like how perilous it seems and how much Tom Cruise throws himself literally into every moment of that scene, and how much they go out of their way to show A, that yes, it's Tom Cruise, and B, yes, we're really that high. Again, when I saw the movie opening weekend, not opening day, but opening weekend, because it opened, I think, a week early if you saw it in IMAX. There was like an extra week-long engagement. And for certain sequences, it would open up to the full like IMAX aperture. Right. And the Burj Khalifa was obviously one. And so you get that amazing first shot where it's Tom Cruise looking out the window. The camera then goes over his shoulder to shoot all the way down to the ground so you can see, okay, yes, this is how high we are. And then in the same shot, Tom Cruise kind of swings out onto the window, all in the same shot, so they can't fake it.
Right.
And it's unbelievable. Again, that's what I think Brad Bird brings to this movie, is just a sense of like how to make this thing move, how to make it always entertaining, how to make it really inventive sort of visually, how to stage things that we haven't seen, because we've seen so many action movies, but we haven't seen them exactly like this. Mm-hmm. And going into today, my memory was that I liked Rogue Nation better. And I think Rogue Nation is a better
story.
Yeah. It's more of a movie that kind of holds together. Well, we understand who the characters are, what they want, what they're trying to
even
do.
Even the idea of Ilsa Faust.
And that, listen.
No, I'm saying.
Let's not discount.
What?
How much Ilsa Faust brings to.
Of course not.
The movie.
But I'm even saying just the idea of a character. Because like you said, Ghost Protocol is all about set piece to set piece to set piece. It is a travelogue. It is a postcard movie where it's like, now we're in Mumbai. Now we're in Dubai. Now we're, I don't know. In what rhymes with Mumbai and Dubai?
I'm not real sure.
I think Rogue Nation does that too, you know, going from Vienna to London, wherever. But it is introducing characters and motivations that Ghost Protocol does not have.
Right.
There's, like you said, the connecting tissue, the through thread with Paula Patton, who is just a beautiful presence on camera. How she had a relationship with Sawyer. So she has a vengeance angle. There's Jeremy Renner with the wife protecting. He used to be a field agent. Right. There's a connection there, but it's really thin. It doesn't need to be there at all. Right. It does not help or hurt the plot. It's just sort of to make them more human, probably. And I think with Rogue Nation, you've got Ilsa Faust, the British secret agent, who it's like, what are her motivations? The whole time you're kind of wondering if she, you know.
Right.
And you know that she's a good person, a good guy. But there is that, you don't know.
Right.
Right? So I want to talk real quick, though, about the Burj Khalifa set piece. It's great. You're right. And I wanted to also talk about, in Rogue Nation, the airplane set piece. Now, I don't know if you want to tell that quick story before I get to my thing or whatever. This the idea well, that like, it's yeah, in this had, marketing a lot.
Yeah, I had reviewed the movie when it first came out, and I think I mentioned this in the review. This is years ago, so I'm not expecting anyone listening to remember. But the whole marketing was built around Tom Cruise hanging on the side of an airplane, because by now, Ghost Protocol has established this franchise as Tom Cruise is going to do crazy things, right? And that's the draw of this series. What is Tom Cruise going to do? And Ghost Protocol raised the bar crazy high, and so Rogue Nation is like, well, we're going to build the marketing around him hanging out the outside of an airplane. So it was the poster. It was the end. It was like the money shot of the trailer, this airplane lifting off the ground with Tom Cruise hanging on the side of it. And so I'm waiting the whole, not waiting. I'm going into the movie expecting like, okay, this is going to be the Burj Khalifa sequence. This is going to be the big
climax, the middle of the movie.
The money sequence. And instead, the movie opens with that. And again, that to me is Christopher McQuarrie trying to subvert some of what we expect from one of these movies. While they're still, again, establishing what the formula is, they're trying to kind of mess with it a little bit. So I go in expecting this to be the main centerpiece of the movie, and instead, he opens the movie with it. And we don't really... We don't see it resolve. We don't know what the point is. You know, it's not. It's like a James Bond cold open, almost. Yes. And so then it's like, well, so where are we going to go from here? Where, you know, and I guess the underwater sequence is this movie's Burj Khalifa, but it just cannot.
No, it can't compete. And I think the stakes are, there's definitely a lot of anxiety with that scene. Cause I'm always, not always, but I find myself sometimes holding my breath with characters in underwater sequences, and you just kind of get nervous, even though you know that like Ethan Hunt is fine. He's going to be fine, even though he dies and comes back, whatever. He's going to be fine. My point with this, though, is to talk about Brad Bird's direction in the Burj Khalifa sequence. All the things you mentioned, him putting the camera outside, bringing the camera back in the same beat, Tom Cruise steps outside to show the gravity of the situation. The airplane sequence is real. It's Tom Cruise hanging on the side of an airplane. Now, granted, he is strapped in just like with Burj Khalifa. There's wires. There's, you know.
Right.
That's later taken out in post. But there's a way that Christopher McQuarrie shoots it, or doesn't shoot it, that I know it's real, and it's still, don't get me wrong, I'm nitpicking here a lot, but it's hard to, when you compare the two, it's apples and oranges.
Sure.
Because again, the Burj Khalifa is so just mind-boggling that the airplane sequence to me is sort of like, it almost didn't need to be on the outside of a plane because it didn't really feel like, I didn't get the same gravity.
Oh,
or the
see,
same...
I did. And what I like that Christopher McQuarrie does is that he puts Tom Cruise sort of in the one side of the frame, and he starts with the plane on the ground. And so on the right side of the plane, we just keep seeing the ground getting further and further away. And I like how long he holds the shot for.
I like all that too. I'm just saying there's not another element of it that gives me the same sort of like wow factor that the Burj Khalifa
sure.
sequence has.
Well, because again, the Burj Khalifa, and this is why after watching the two, there was a moment in Rogue Nation where I really like it. And there's some really cool sequences. And again, I can't say enough about Rebecca Ferguson, but like, it's a little slower, not in a bad way,
right.
But I was realizing as we got to the climax where I was like, so this is the climax, you know, like it doesn't have a big finish really. I still like the climax with, you know, welcome to the IMF or whatever. Like it's cool. And then once again, kind of pulls the rug out. I don't want to spoil what the last shot is, but they turn the lights on and you're like, oh, that's all this is. It's kind of cool. But,
yes,
it can't compete. To me, Ghost Protocol is like less of a movie, but the set pieces and the action make it a more entertaining movie for me, and the one that I would probably rather rewatch.
That's definitely how I feel about it, too. I think that, again, the character motivations, the backstory, the introduction of Alec Baldwin's character, I think I like the addition of Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the, you know, the little, that interplay.
Well, it's another thing for them to be working against.
Right. Right. And I think that, but again, in going back to that travelogue idea of Ghost Protocol, when they go to all these exotic locations, I mean, they do it, again, they do it in Rogue Nation, but it just doesn't have the same, like, they're
sure.
in Casablanca, but it's just kind of a road chase on motorcycles in Casablanca
sure.
in an underwater tank.
Right.
There's not really, like, when they're in Mumbai, the whole time
right.
you're in Mumbai. Like, it feels very, you
or
know.
They're in Russia, and they're playing the Hunt from Red October. Hunt
right.
from Red October. The Hunt for Red October. It's not really the music, but it is. So what I was going to say, I'm sorry, about the Burj Khalifa sequence is, and what's great about Ghost Protocol is the way that it continues to escalate. Everything escalates mm-hmm. in Ghost Protocol. It does, to a certain extent, in Rogue Nation, but not
well, in Rogue
the
Nation,
same
there's
sense.
A whole sequence with, like, the Prime Minister, and it's just kind of like, it's just... It's not, the stakes aren't super high. It just feels
right. So for the plane to be sort of a 1-to-1 with Burj Khalifa, the engine would have to start to fail.
Yes,
and then I mean it kind of does it where he finally gets in the plane
and
then the back is
blown
open.
Out. Yeah,
right.
That is funny.
So if he had then like had to hold on and climb back in, like then
or
it's more of a 1-to-1,
or, you know.
Right? Because Burj Khalifa, like the glove malfunctions, and then he has to run alongside the building,
and the spark thing breaks
right.
and kicks him down 10
right.
stories, and
then he doesn't have enough cable to swing back in, and so he has to do this
right.
crazy jump. I mean, it just keeps finding ways of turning the screws, and that's what makes it so entertaining. And that's, again, that's Brad Bird saying, like, oh, here's how movies work.
Right. Why do you think Paula Patton is not in the sequel or not in number 5?
I mean, there's
Paula Patton is so beautiful and she's great in Mumbai. I love her so much.
She's great for a lot of reasons. She's obviously incredibly beautiful, as is Rebecca Ferguson. And what I like about them is that they are not romantic interests.
Well, Paula Patton and Sawyer, but...
Right. And even that is almost like to provide another obstacle, because it's what leads Paula Patton to kick Blue is the Warmest Color out the window, and
mm-hmm.
they needed her, so now we have a new obstacle. You know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
it's like, it serves a purpose. I love how, you know, they're not just like capable, they are equals of Ethan Hunt, and that is refreshing.
I just kind of wish, and my point in saying that is, I know you don't know the answer, why is Paula Patton not around, but I'm just saying, when you bring back Simon Pegg, and you bring back, Simon Pegg has a very particular role to play, and I like Simon Pegg, he is comic relief, speaking of like the whole idea of, again, Arrival and Westworld, Simon Pegg is not a sidekick, he's not there to crack jokes, but he is funny and capable.
Right, he's funny, right, without being...
A doofus. He has a little doof. He has a doofus moment in Ghost Protocol where he like allows Blue is the Warmest Color to like one up him.
Sure.
But then he saves at the end. He does. He like makes up for it, doesn't he? Is that the same? Am I thinking Rogue Nation?
I think it might be Rogue Nation.
Gotcha.
When he like charges the person in the sound booth. Right?
No. Oh, I don't even know. They all kind of blend together.
Yeah. Right. But he's not just around to like say the dumb thing.
Right.
Or like always provide the punchline. He is funny. And these movies are funny. And that's something that one and two definitely don't have.
Yes.
Three has a little bit more of. But there's such a playful sense of humor about four and five.
And it's playful not in a way that, again, it's like Simon Pegg's character isn't cracking jokes. He is saying the thing that you're thinking
yes.
about Ethan Hunt. Like, he can do it. He's Superman, basically. It's not this Josh Gad hammy
exactly.
way of approaching
That's a perfect
something.
Way of saying it.
Like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of
right.
Olaf,
yes.
you know, in anything.
Yes.
Have you seen the Frozen, Olaf's Frozen Adventure? The little...
No.
The Frozen short. It came out before Coco and it was released
no.
separately.
No.
It's all about Olaf. And it's the same lesson. It's kind of like Cars, where Mater is kind of a standout. So let's make Cars
yeah,
2
yeah, yeah.
all about Mater. And it's like, that's not what Cars...
Cars 3 fixed it.
Cars 3 is good. Cars 3
Cruz Ramirez.
Yes. Cruz Ramirez is funny. Reach for your lunch. What's that? It's your lunch.
Cars 3 cast.
My point is that Simon Pegg is, I think, very capable and very... Oh. I like his addition to it. But you've got Jeremy Renner. You've got Ving Rhames. They're like, they're empty.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're there. And again, I don't want to sound misogynistic or whatever, but it's like, if you're looking for eye candy, it's not Jeremy Renner. It's you've got Tom Cruise already, like, his... specimen of a body, which honestly is too much for me. Sometimes I just wanted to put on a
take it easy
a cowl or something, as Ray would say.
You want him to be Batman?
To Adam Driver, to Kylo Ren. So why not have Paula Patton just be one of the team? And you know, obviously, it's Rebecca Ferguson is going to be more of the more primary female player. But I want Paula Patton to be there too. I want her to, you know, unless this is just her, like, because of the nature of the IMF being what it is, in that, like, you'll be called upon when you're needed. That she is sort of
weird...
in the wings waiting to, like, step in to do whatever role she has. Because aside from Simon Pegg being communication/technology, the rest of them are all just, like, universal badass.
Yeah. Well, Ving Rhames was sort of, like, technology guy, yeah,
yeah
right. from the first movie.
Well, yeah, because he can't even, like, keep track of Rebecca Ferguson. He is literally, there's a scene where, like, they're surrounding Tom Cruise and Rebecca Ferguson, and all of a sudden, Tom Cruise has to run away. He says, stay with her! And he starts walking towards her from 15 feet away, and a family walks in front of him, and she disappears.
To be fair, she teleports.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
There's a weird lack of continuity between the movies, which I like, but then also... this is when they start to try to have continuity. So Ghost Protocol is really the first mention of, like, your wife dying, and we see Michelle Monaghan show back up, and there's a connection to part three. And then part five kind of talks about the thing at the Kremlin, and there's some connection to part four. So there's, like, tenuous continuity. But for whatever reason, a lot of people don't come back. Tandy Newton didn't come back from part two. I believe she was offered and decided not to. Maggie Q is sort of the girl team member in three. It's Maggie Q and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Hmm.
And they're on the team, but, like, not to the extent that the team is in four and five.
Right.
They're just kind of there, and they don't come back. I don't know with Paula Patton. Like, was she offered and decided not to? Did they decide to go another way? I mean, obviously.
I'm just sick of Renner. I just want her to be.
Oh, yeah, no.
I
get,
like,
that.
If it was a little interplay between her and Ving Rhames, like, being. Like, I feel like whenever Jeremy Renner and Ving Rhames are on screen, it's like, it's time to check out. Whereas if it's Paula Patton.
That's when
and
the
Ving
audience
Rhames,
goes to get candy.
That's right.
There's a weird thing with Tom Cruise and co-stars, and it's something that I've noticed over many years, where, and I think it all goes back to the weird, like, auditioning a wife and all of his weird shrouded in mystery stuff that we're never going to totally know about, right? We've mm-hmm. heard those stories about his wife auditions and stuff. So many times it seems like his female co-stars are not total unknowns, but, like, I couldn't even tell you the name of his female co-star in The Mummy. They're rarely stars. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. He seems to pick relative unknowns, and I don't feel like he's doing it in that way where he's trying to make them stars. Maybe he is. Maybe it's like when he picks directors. I don't know. To me, there's something weirder about it, and what I like about Paula Patton and Rebecca Ferguson is that I think they could very easily have fallen into that trap of like, we're maybe the up and comer, slightly less known person handpicked by Tom Cruise to be in this movie, and could potentially disappear into obscurity like several of his other co-stars. But they both are so good in the movie that they sort of refuse to be sidelined, and they end up, you know, if not outright stealing the movie, certainly being his equal.
Definitely. Kicking the
Rebecca
shoes
Ferguson
off.
Steals the movie. I think.
I think Paula Patton, though, there's
Paula Patton kicking the shoes off is the greatest thing.
Taking the shoes off and chasing down
is the greatest thing.
Lea Seydoux is unbelievable.
Yes.
And
because again, it's been building to that moment.
It's also like
when I used to watch wrestling and there was like a tag team match and two of the people hated each other and you're just waiting for the one to get tagged in, you know, and the partner keeps trying but like falling short, and they want in so bad, and then finally that tag happens and the Roddy Piper finally gets in the ring and he's all fired up and he just beats the shit out of Bad News Brown or something. That's Paula Patton when she kicks her shoes off. She's like, ooh, yay, my turn, and she just, it's awesome.
Yeah. It is weird to think about these characters too. Like, obviously, one of the themes of the movies is chance and luck. Obviously, that's talked about a lot in Rogue Nation, where Alec Baldwin is kind of criticizing the IMF to Jeremy Renner and their previous operations. It wasn't Alec Baldwin, it was the chairman.
Right,
to
that excellent actor.
Right, the white, gray-haired gentleman.
Whitey McWasperson.
Wasperson. Talking about chance and luck and how much it is chance and luck. And so much so that, like, literally, them getting the codes to a satellite relay relies on Paula Patton's just ungodly sexiness to seduce Slumdog Millionaire. And that works because she literally wears eyeliner and like a revealing top. And it, you know what? Works. It does. You can't argue
it's
with science.
It's the same as knowing that Tom Cruise is going to be able to hold his breath. It's just like, we know this is going to work.
It's science fact.
You're Paula Patton.
Oh my gosh.
Is this the best action movie franchise?
Ooh. Give me some other examples.
Dude, I can't do all your work for you. Mm. Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, The Terminator, The Matrix.
Point Break, 1 and 2.
Speed 1 and 2?
Fast and
the
Furious
The Expendables,
franchise.
Fast and Furious, Rambo.
I can't answer that.
I'll say it is.
Well, I think that, again, you've got a dog in there, right? Number two is a dog.
Yes, but I would... Is two any worse of a dog than, like...
Die Hard.
A couple diehards, you know what right. I mean? It's not just... There's not just one bad diehard.
I haven't seen one, two, or three, if at all, in a very long time.
you definitely have seen two.
But number four and five, and according... I mean, again, time will tell with Fallout, but... If these next three are like, if it maintains the level,
yes,
and hopefully it will go a little further, you know, step up a little bit. I think you've got to
step up.
Step up.
That's another franchise.
Step up. You've got
Mission
a good
Impossible
argument
to the streets.
You've got a good argument that it might be one of the best action franchises. I mean, would you consider Bond an action franchise? It's such a incongruous thing, though. Like, how do you?
That's a hard. I would almost Bond is almost its own thing,
right? But this is definitely taking from the Bond playbook.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it's
sure.
Right. I don't know.
I think it is. And I know that's a kind of a bold statement, and I'm sure.
Well, I mean, personally, Ghost Protocol is one of my favorite action movies maybe ever, you know?
Because it's like one of the best.
But then you think about, like, I mean, T2 or
awesome.
Die Hard.
Also
or
very good.
Lethal Weapon. I mean, those are.
These are all really good movies.
Those individual movies are amazing. But when you say franchise, Diminishing Lethal Weapon
exactly.
2 is good.
Exactly.
Lethal Weapon 3 is okay. And the rest are just terrible.
I don't think there's any Mission Impossible movie that's as good as the other movies you mentioned.
Right. That's what I'm having a hard time with.
Yeah.
That I think Ghost Protocol is the best of the five. Now, but I don't think it's as good as Terminator 2.
Right.
Although, personally, for me, I'd probably put it on before Terminator 2.
Interesting.
Because Paula Patton, mostly. Actually, you know why I put it on? I put it on for the scene where they're
Edward Furlong should have been in... He should have been the hacker in Ghost Protocol.
Where they're in the Mumbai, like, warehouse.
She's not my mother, Todd.
And they're talking to each other in Ghost Protocol. And Jeremy Renner's like, what's with that, Benji? Where were you? And then Tom Cruise is at the sink, and he comes out. He's like, you're an analyst?
Stop fighting, you guys.
Right. We're a family.
Yeah.
You only fight with family. Like, that sequence I watch I watched Ghost Protocol just for that sequence. The heavy lifting that the actors do in describing their individual motivations.
But again, think about
such a
think about
shitty
how that,
scene. I
because,
hate it so
again,
much.
Think about that was a scene that somebody had to write because they're like, how do we string these two scenes together?
In a way, it's admirable.
But that's like not a way to make a movie.
No.
You know, and again, it makes sense that, yeah, they shot all the action sequences first. Because that's what's great, and then they strung it together with some like kind of clumsy narrative stuff.
And it's just Jeremy Renner just acting poorly. I'm done with that thumb. Done with the thumb. Say it with me, everyone. Done with the thumb.
Hashtag done with the thumb.
Hey, man, I'm done with the thumb, man.
Let's say Fallout is great. Mm-hmm. That means there are five good to great Mission Impossible movies, and one.
You'd say
not
one
great.
Three are good.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
And one that's
I'm just genuinely asking.
Kind of a stinker.
Right.
There's no other franchise that comes close. I mean, I like the first two Lethal Weapons. I can tolerate part three.
Right.
I like the first two Die Hards. I can tolerate the third one.
Right.
Which people are freaking out right now because people love three and don't like two. But it's okay.
Which one's three?
Three is him and Samuel Jackson running around New York.
No. No, people don't like two.
A lot of people don't like two.
Two is amazing.
People outright hate two.
I like two a lot.
I enjoy two a lot, and I like three less, but whatever.
Two, Die Hard has a similar relationship with me as Lethal Weapon. I think I had seen two before in both situations. I think I saw two first.
Okay.
And had seen two way more.
Because
remember, like with Lethal Weapon, I was like, no, Lethal Weapon 2, it's the better one. Yeah. You're like, no, watch Lethal Weapon. And I watched Lethal Weapon. I'm like, no, this is definitely better.
Yeah.
But Lethal Weapon
2 fun.
Has a good place in my heart. And same with Die Hard 2, it's Christmas at the airport. Bring me lots of airplanes now. I've seen it way more than Die Hard 1, so I like it a lot.
Okay.
But it's not bad. Who thinks it's bad?
Oh, a lot of people.
They're nuts.
Outright hate.
It's got Sadler.
It does have Sadler. Mm. No, I like Die Hard 2.
Best 2 out of 3.
Die Hard 3 is fine. Like, it's watchable. Love the first two Terminator movies. Then I'm kind of done.
But that's one thing where it's T1 and T2. I'm going to say T1. Terminator and T2 are, amazing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So far above and beyond.
Fast and Furious, I mean, honestly, like, might come closest because I like 1. I enjoy 2, even though it's garbage. I like 5. I like 6. So that's
what's
4
your favorite
of them that I
Fast
like.
Fast and Furious movie.
5. Fast 5. That's the one. That's the Ghost Pros. That's where they're like, oh, here's what it is.
Yeah. And then what about the most recent one? You love that one the most.
Oh, well, because.
My gosh, it is such a piece of poop.
I love Charlize Theron in her dreads playing a character maybe called Cypher, which is, always really good. Really, really, really good. Not a fan of the Fate of the Furious.
No.
At all.
I missed it in theaters. I saw it on HBO, and I remember thinking, this isn't even a movie. It didn't even feel like a movie.
No.
And you realize, I never thought Paul Walker would be the heart of anything. but he's such a...
Yeah.
He's a relatable character.
Yes.
He's a likable character.
Yes.
Without him, there aren't any of those things.
Even 4, which I did not like, I remember... seeing 4 obviously before 5 came out, and 5 was the one where it's like, oh, here's what it
7,
is.
And then 7, 8, 9. Gotcha.
5 is the one where it's like, oh, here's what it is. But I was seeing 4, and that was the one where like they had all come back for the first time since 1. Mm. And I didn't really like 4, but Paul Walker, I was like, oh, wait, he's gotten so much more interesting with age now playing a grizzled FBI agent, because that's the career path.
That's what happens when you are a bad cop, is you become a...
You get fired from the police, you move down to Florida, you steal cars,
right,
and then you join the FBI.
Letty. There's usually a Letty involved somewhere at
Always
some point.
A Letty. So yeah, he was the most interesting part of 4, and then, yeah, turns out the franchise needs him.
Did you see that Letty movie, the Michelle Rodriguez, Switcho Changeo?
Yes.
What's that movie called? I believe it's called...
The Assignment.
Switcho Changeo.
Directed by Walter Hill. Director of Crossroads, starring Britney Spears.
Back full circle. Okay, so Ving Rhames, we've established.
Yes.
Jeremy Renner, out.
Out. Goodbye,
Rebecca
Brandt.
Rebecca Ferguson, back in. Tell me more about this Michelle Monaghan. So she's the wife that she was in 3. She was killed or something, but
well,
she comes
no.
back in Ghost Protocol at the end.
Yes. So the stuff about her being killed.
It seems needlessly confused. The reason I get that it's a through line from 3 to 4, but to me, not being as close to 3... And I understand that they want to make this a franchise that has continuity. So I get that.
Yes. Listen, that. Listen.
I understand.
Listen, I get that.
I get that, okay?
Listen.
But it seems to me to be, it seems to me that the movie doesn't need it, A, and it's kind of confusing, B, because she looks at him, locks eyes, smiles, walks away.
Yeah.
And now he's free to what? Have his dalliances with other femme fatales?
Rebecca Ferguson literally swoops in.
Yes.
She mouths, wouldn't want to be ya? Before she gets on, what, the ferry? What is she getting on?
Implied?
No, it's always implied. So, three is like, he's marrying Michelle Monaghan. He's going to have kind of a normal domestic life. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know he's Ethan Hunt's super spy. She is then kidnapped by Philip Seymour Hoffman. The movie opens with what seems like Philip Seymour Hoffman murdering her. She does not get murdered. Spoilers. Mm. But all the stuff about her supposedly
the
dying.
Movie opens with it?
Yes, and then circles back around to that moment. So it opens like 2/3 of the way and then flashes back and then catches up to that scene.
Gotcha. So she has a bigger part.
Correct.
Than just being murdered.
Correct. She's in pretty much the whole movie.
Okay.
But
by the way, Philip Seymour Hoffman, another actor like Adam Driver, everything he says is interesting.
Yes.
You give him any piece of dialogue, he's going to make it interesting. Jeremy Renner, no, thank you.
And these movies have not had great villains.
Right.
I think the villain in Ghost Protocol is probably the weakest, with the exception of maybe Doug Ray Scott in part two, because good Lord, what is he doing?
They couldn't just decide on one name. They went with three.
So, and the guy in five is like barely a step up.
They're trying to do something with it, but to me, it's like
just the whole syndicate thing and his weird voice. But again, he's coming back for six. Rebecca Ferguson is coming back for six. Christopher McQuarrie is coming back for six. So,
Who else?
Tom Cruise back for six.
Renner?
Simon Pegg. I don't think Renner's coming back. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't think so. He tested poorly.
Yeah, well, this test audience.
Baldwin's coming back.
Okay.
Monaghan's coming back for at least one scene, because it's in the trailers where he's like...
I've kind of avoided the trailers for it.
There's a moment where he has like a vision of them getting married or something, and then a nuclear bomb goes off, and I'm assuming it's a dream, unless this movie has a dark ending. Could that be the follow-up?
But then she mouthed smell you later, so I didn't know exactly.
So all the stuff about her dying was not in part three. Like, it happens supposedly in between the two movies.
Gotcha.
Because,
and that's the Jeremy Renner
he tells that story. So I remember seeing Ghost Protocol and being kind of annoyed, because it lets you believe for most of the movie Michelle Monaghan died off camera between 3 and 4, and that is a thing that I hate when sequels do, and mm-hmm. I've talked about this a million times. It's Bourne Identity syndrome,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, why do you make me invest in a character and their relationship for an entire movie and then just be like, oh yeah, they died? And this movie makes you think that that's what it's doing for the whole movie, and then reveals at the end, yes, she's still alive, and he has to stay away in order to keep her safe or whatever. But
because at the very end, she's with some orderly or something. It's very confusing. I don't exactly know at the end of Ghost Protocol.
I believe that's
she's
her driver.
An African-American
gentleman. Very wealthy.
In, like, hospital scrubs.
Yeah, she's
and
a,
she's playing with him.
I think
him.
She's a doctor.
She's a doctor?
I think. Or a nurse or something.
But why
in part
is he
three?
In scrubs? It seems like he is her, like, orderly. Like, he is taking a mental patient out on a field trip. That is literally, I'm not making this up. That's, like, the vibe I get from, like.
I haven't read. So, three is the only one I have not.
African-American gentleman in scrubs taking out.
Would you
Michelle
call him
Monaghan.
Disorderly?
I would call him a disorderly.
Three is the only one I have not rewatched now. But
should we watch it right now?
I mean, in theory.
And then come back to close out the podcast.
My read when I watched it was like, oh, they're coworkers. Because I think I remember her working in a hospital.
But she was awfully friendly with him, too, which makes me, again, that's why I thought she
maybe
was
maybe she's
like
found love somewhere else.
No, just mentally challenged or something. Just like...
Like she didn't die in Serbia or Croatia or where
Croatia,
were they?
Yeah.
Croatia. She didn't die, but like maybe she like...
Lost part of her brain?
Yeah. Like maybe. Took a hit?
I don't know. A hit of what?
Acid.
Oh.
She took the brown acid, and now she's all messed up.
Stuff will mess you up.
And now this orderly has to carry her around.
Disorderly.
She looks at everyone like they're Ethan Hunt. She has no idea that that's her husband.
So, like, she mouthed, take it sleazy. She does that to everyone. She mouths just random expressions to everyone. Toodaloo, kangaroo. Toodaloo, kangaroo. Mission Impossible. Toodaloo kangaroo.
In a while, crocodile.
Mission Impossible 8. Not if I see you first.
It's like I want them to keep making these movies, even though they've been making... Tom Cruise has been doing this for 22 years now.
Right. Well, that's straight.
But no. None of them straight. But I want them to keep making these movies, but I don't want them to fuck up. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, and
I don't want there to be a Fate of the Furious.
There's going to be one. It's not doesn't seem. Like
I didn't
it's
even
far
love
out.
Seven, but they should have ended at seven, like Fast and Furious. I'm talking about, you know, when exactly. I didn't love that movie, but it's like, okay, you did the best you could with what you had. Horrible situation. Thank you. And that's where the series needed to end, because as we can see, they should not have continued. I just don't want that to happen to Mission Impossible, or it will not retain its status as the greatest action franchise going or of all time.
What if they bring in like a young Miles Teller
to be, play Ethan Hunt's son?
Yes, to play Ethan
Mutt
Hunt's
Hunt.
Mutt Hunt.
Mission Impossible 10, Mutt Hunt.
I'm going to hunt for Mutt.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have to wait 10, 15 Munt. Years to do that. Obviously, they already tried to make Renner the legacy.
Renner should be no one's legacy. Aside from his mom, like his
he's
parents.
He's not the Bourne legacy.
No, his parents are
he's
very proud of him.
Hunt legacy.
I'm very proud of him, too. He was good in Hurt Locker, but it's like enough. Yeah, enough's yeah. enough. There's enough talent. Like you had mentioned during the movie, it's a shame that we've got all these young actresses, female, incredible female actors who are... They had their chance to make it big. That moment passed, and now they're kind of gone. And
they
somehow
still work,
Renner
but like they're not going to be
is working
a star
like more than anyone.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. Ving Rhames continues to
a lot of Renner hate on this
work,
cast.
Despite being fairly unremarkable. You know, mm-hmm. like, but always gets work. And he makes a lot of garbage, like direct to video shit.
I believe it.
But you know, Michelle Monaghan will have to in 2 years also. Because she's already just like sort of playing wife, you know?
I have to think with the sheer number of actors and actresses, and it's got to be near impossible. I mean, it's lightning in a bottle, right? In terms of
sure.
getting cast in a movie in the first place. If you have talent and skill and chops to like get recognized for that casting, to then get more work and build off that. But it's still like it's I would think as an actor, I mean, I have a regular 9-to-5 job, but while you're making the movie you're making, you have to think, and you have people obviously working for you, agents and managers and stuff, but like I got to work on my next 3 gigs
right.
while I'm making
sure,
this
sure.
movie. And if that kind of dries up, and obviously a lot of people transition out of it fine and they're happy to like do whatever and just get a side or a regular job or whatever, but man, it's a hard business.
It just seems like for women there's like one Anne Hathaway to every 3
Renners,
Miles Tellers.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
who just keeps getting parts is now going to play young Goose in the Top Gun sequel.
Young Goose.
Despite being in a lot of garbage movies.
He's a Gosling.
And, right? Why not just get the real deal?
Right. Young Goose. Ryan Gosling's available.
Hello.
He is actually blonde and looks like Anthony Edwards.
Oh, and is a talented actor and
right.
not Miles Teller.
Miles Teller's a talented actor.
Okay.
I like Miles Teller.
Sure. He comes off like a prick.
Yeah.
I'm not really a fan of him as a human being, and yet keeps getting...
You're not a fan of Tom Cruise as a human being either. That's something we talked before about the compartmentalization, that I have done it so successfully with Tom Cruise.
In many ways, I am a fan of Tom Cruise as a human being, you know? But there's this other side that, yeah, like, I can't reconcile.
I am
like,
not a fan of any of him as a human being, though. I mean, his whole reason for living as a human being is to promulgate the Church of Scientology. It's to
yeah.
salute L. Ron Hubbard and to, you know, it's so strange to me that he auditioning wives and whatever. But for some reason, I'm able to compartmentalize and say, that's crazy real life Tom Cruise. I love him in movies. His charisma, the projects he chooses to make, with exceptions of like The Mummy or Oblivion or whatever else, you know.
Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages.
Lions
but
for Lambs.
I can't, I mean, I guess you could say maybe does he do charity work? I have no idea. Does he live a good life? I don't know. But everything that I can tell, you know, and everything I know about Scientology is the worst. So
anyway, that's our conversation about Ghost Protocol. We are excited about Mission Impossible Fallout. Hopefully we'll do something on the site to cover it, a review or some such shit. Douglas, I'm glad you were here for this.
Thank you. I'm glad I was here for it too. You're a very passionate creature.
You are my greatest mission.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.